You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and Public Radio International in collaboration with The New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Given the political language of race in America, it's surprising to note that in the most common narratives of human culture, there is a grand diversity. The polyglot of language and cultures at the Tower of Babel in the Bible. In Roman times, there was lively trade and interaction between the Egyptian empires and the black African Nubians to the south. Romans, Arabs, Egyptians, Greeks, and Nubians together were a no doubt common sight in the ancient world. So it is in this context that the notion of segregation of the races in America and other places is reexamined in a new book on race and its mythology. Segregation of the races was taken for granted during most of American history, enforced by law in America, and also by apartheid law in South Africa, reversed only after a bloody armed struggle in South Africa led by the late Nelson Mandela being memorialized today. In the U.S., change came after a civil war and the often violent civil rights movement of the 20th century. But segregation of the races and an obsession with racial differences culturally and biologically is a construct of our time, and in many ways a peculiarly American construct. Jacqueline Jones is a professor of history at the University of Texas at Austin and the author of A Dreadful Deceit, The Myth of Race from the Colonial Era to Obama's America. In her book, Jones says that over time, man-made creation of race has been used to justify our behaviors, but that racial prejudices have no basis in fact or science or even culture.
I found that the earliest colonial slaveholders were not talking about race at all. They were looking for a compliant, cheap, easily exploitable workforce, and they sorted out various kinds of workers, English indentured servants, Irish indentured servants, Native Americans, as well as Africans. And what they found was that Africans were ultimately the most vulnerable and thus the most easily exploitable group, not because of their race, but because they lacked advocates in this Atlantic world of colliding empires. It's not really until the American Revolution that people start to talk about race in a serious way. Thomas Jefferson, a notable example here. And he's obviously seeking to justify the exclusion of a large number of adult men, men of African descent, from the body politic. And the way he thinks he can do that is by defining them as a separate race. So this is a process. People do have to develop this idea over time. They have to rationalize and justify a system of slavery, and they do it by using this concept race. But it's a pretext that comes after the fact.
By the time we get to the Civil War, how well has the mythology worked its way into culture so that it complicates our ability to emancipate the slaves, to do what Lincoln did, and to attempt to make the social changes post-Civil War?
I think the interesting thing about the Civil War is the way that these mythologies are revealed to be very malleable and fluid over time. For instance, before the war in the South, many slaveholders justified slavery by saying that enslaved men and women were childlike, that they were dependent, that they were grateful for white care. Then during the Civil War, the stereotype changes, and suddenly black people are considered subversive to the Confederate cause. They're giving aid and comfort to the enemy, the Union soldiers. And then finally, after the Civil War, a new mythology of race arises, and that is that black people are the dupes of Northern Republicans, that they are unable to think for themselves. They're going to be manipulated by Republicans, and it is imperative then that white Southerners control this group once again under different means now that slavery is over. So we see a great deal of fluidity in these mythologies. They are stories. They are rationalizations concocted by a group of people who benefit from them.
How does race complicate class, and how does class complicate race?
In the sixth of the biographical sketches I include in this book, I look at Simon P. Owens. He wrote under the pseudonym Charles Denby. He was an auto worker in Detroit, born in Alabama in the early 20th century, and he wrestled with this tension. On the one hand, he embraced the cause of the working class in general, and he believed that labor-saving technologies were affecting whites and blacks together, suggesting that they must move forward together to address these tremendous changes in the workplace. On the other hand, he faced in both radical circles and labor circles this notion that black people were nothing special. They were part of the working class, and they should not talk about their unique heritage, their unique struggles. They should march lockstep with UAW leaders or radical leaders. And Simon Owens pushed back against that idea. He said, black people have a unique history, a history that is worth remembering because it has so damaged the structure of many institutions in the United States. In other words, the legacies of these destructive racial mythologies remain with us today in very stark form. And he said to deny that history, to deny these legacies would be a grave mistake.
Of course, Denby is writing in the 60s and 70s, and his words certainly live on, but America has moved on. And in the Obama era, where would you say there are pockets of escaping this narrative in the United States today? And where would you say the clinging to these narratives still exists in politics and in society?
Frankly, I think the clinging to this narrative still exists in our persistent use of the word race. We talk about racial politics, a post-racial society. We talk about race relations. We talk about racial disparities in health and education. We're constantly talking about race, and I liken it to eye color. Suppose we devised a society where people with blue eyes were considered superior to people with brown eyes. Suppose we got rid of legislation that separated people of different eye color. Would we still be invoking eye color as a significant marker of society? I think we should rethink our use of the word race because it reifies the notion that race is real. And in fact, race is a myth. Race is a fiction. Often when people use the word, they're not really talking about biological differences between people. They're talking about a historical process. In the long run, I think it is a destructive trend to continue to use the word at all.
Jacqueline Jones is the author of A Dreadful Deceit, The Myth of Race from the Colonial Era to Obama's America. She's a professor of history at the University of Texas at Austin. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.